Welcome to Revisit Ed, a podcast of redefinedonline.org, catching up on our favorite stories from the new definition of public education. On this episode, Step Up for Students President Doug Tuthill catches up with Kelly Smith, CEO of Prenda, an Arizona-based organization on the front lines of organizing microschools, smaller learning pods of students focused on learning and developing intrinsically. Since their last conversation, Prenda has expanded into Colorado and has worked tirelessly to find partners in districts, charters, and other organizations to bring microschools to new communities. As Smith puts it, microschools strive to see a child as a human being first and to design learning around that truth for a better outcome. Thank you for listening and enjoy the episode.
I'm excited to have Kelly Smith here, who is the CEO, founder and CEO of Prenda, which is the country's leading micro school support system. And you guys are getting a lot of publicity. Everybody's talking about you around the country. I'm sure things are really busy. I just wanted to check in and just get a sense of what's happening. What do the numbers look like? What are you seeing on the ground? What are you guys experiencing? You know, I'm sure people are curious about what life is like inside your bubble.
Sure. I mean, I think probably not a secret that there were a lot of parents interested in micro schools this summer and continuing on in the fall. So we've had a basically ongoing conversation here in Arizona. We've opened up Colorado now, so we've found some awesome partner schools that are excited to work with us, and families are signing up for micro schools there as well. So it's all positive. That's exciting, but probably not that surprising. I think the thing that I had the most questions about is this viewed as a kind of a short-term temporary band-aid fix, or is this a real kind of step change in the way parents are thinking about education? And I feel like I've been looking at the evidence, at least from our end, I feel like I have some pretty good confidence at this point that there are some questions being asked. Well, we've seen this qualitatively, anecdotally. Now we're seeing it in the data that, you know, in some regards, the genie's out of the bottle. I think there are lots of people, for example, that have come to us not sure, right? They're thinking, well, let me do this micro school for a while, and we'll see how it goes. They're reporting that their child's engaged, that the format really works, that some of their concerns around socialization and some of these things have actually felt in some ways better than what they had before, because this group of 10 in a, you know, really kind of a safe, comfortable environment right in the neighborhood can be really empowering, and kids come out of their shell a little bit. They make very genuine connections with other humans, and the learning guides have stepped up incredibly and have been able to deliver that type of care. So we've been monitoring churn as schools here in Arizona have reopened. We're watching to see which students go back, and we've seen some, but it's a relatively small, actually a very small percentage so far that have gone back to traditional settings.
Are you continuing to see robust growth as we go into the school year?
This isn't a natural time to change, so we've definitely seen the growth slow down. I think for the most part, parents were panicking in July and August, kind of get something situated, and I think most people are happy to kind of be settled, even if, you know, if you've picked some sort of kind of hybrid, remote and on-campus program or whatever is available to you, a fully remote version of whatever school. I think for the most part, things have stabilized a little bit. I think what we expect, based on just the last couple of years, and this goes beyond COVID, but we do see people starting to ask questions again, kind of close to the holiday break in the middle of the year. So we're kind of building up for that and trying to prepare ourselves for an additional rush. And thankfully, the parents are having good experiences and talking about it to their friends. So that that continued inflow of interest, you know, as long as we do a good job and support the kids the way we've promised to do, we expect to see more of that.
I presume that the expansion around the country is very much influenced by the regulatory environment in every state. Certainly in Florida, we know that there's some regulatory environments that need to be adjusted. And I can tell you next legislative session, there's going to be a very robust conversation about how to open things up a little bit and allow certainly the scholarship kids to be able to use their scholarships in ways beyond simply brick and mortar schools. Are you seeing this dialogue around the country? I mean, are various states struggling with how to provide the appropriate regulatory environment to make these kinds of opportunities available?
Absolutely. One of our decisions early on was that we were going to make this available for parents that can't pay tuition. And so similar to Step Up and the work you guys are doing, the challenge there was how can we do this in a way that's accessible? For us, that meant finding the right partners, working with districts, charters, various school choice programs, because we wanted to be able to make this available. The other thing that we knew or we strategically decided going in is our resources are thin. We're not going to be in a position to change any laws. And so I've told my team over and over again, we won't get involved in trying to kind of proactively shape the legislative landscape. Now, we welcome people thinking about this and talking about this and happily inform those conversations, but we just don't have resources. So really what we're trying to do is decide a strategy based on, you know, where do the laws currently support that? And it's actually been, there's been heartbreaking conversations where people are really excited and really wanting us to dive in with them and help. And we've kind of had to make those tough calls saying, no, we're going to focus where the laws already support micro schools the way we're doing it today.
You mentioned school districts. Do you have some examples of how school districts have stepped up and partnered with you guys in order to better serve their families?
I've been shocked by this, Doug. I have great examples of people inside of districts that are just so excited. I mean, I think in some ways it's not fair the way school districts have been perceived, because they're champions for kids in those districts and people that are really just dying to do this. They're looking at the needs, they're listening to the communities and the parents, and they're ready to do, really make positive change in terms of how just delivery options and mechanisms. And so we've met a lot of these people. I wish I could say more about the progress that we've made. We've definitely run into, you know, those champions alongside us as a partner, you know, trying to bring this change and offer this as an option to families has definitely ruffled some feathers. And there's people who don't want this type of change to take place. And so we've seen both sides of it. I think on the one hand, I'm choosing to focus on the positive here. There are really just passionate, visionary leaders in education that that are working inside of very traditional systems and stepping up, taking some risks themselves to basically promote, you know, let's try this out, let's do something different.
Yeah, I'm sure the business models are what's complex. Everybody's trying to figure out where the money goes. And school districts, of course, right now are struggling with declining enrollments. I don't know about the rest of the country, but certainly in Florida, school districts are down, you know, 5-10%, and they can't find the kids. They're not sure where they are. And I'm sure they're worried about the kind of model you bring to the table, how that's going to affect their cash flow moving forward. So I presume that's probably the crux of the conversations.
I would have assumed that the finance people tend to be very excited, though. As I've worked with assistant superintendents on the finance side, we deliver education at a lower price than what, or a lower cost than what kind of the traditional models do. You know, there's obviously a different scope in terms of what we're doing, and there's lots of different things. So I'm not saying it's apples to apples, but it generally supports the overall financial health of the district, not to mention keeping these kids enrolled as students of the district. So there are financial reasons that are actually really logical, and I think there's support for that. I think a lot of people have recognized it. I don't think that's the reason. I think it's a deeper thing, and it kind of goes right to the heart of, you know, what should this look like and what should school be? And these are big questions. And I think it's a good time for us to be as a whole, you know, education movement, for everybody to be engaging in these questions of which options should exist and how can we best serve kids and make learning environments that really work for families.
I've been fascinated by this ongoing conversation that's starting to grow about the, it's calling the unschool movement. I'm sure you're very familiar.
Sure.
And I've had some really fascinating interviews recently with people who are deeply in that movement, who talk about the difference between homeschooling, microschooling, unschooling. How is that affecting you guys' thinking? I'm sure as more and more parents begin to engage with you, they're bringing a lot of their own stuff to the table, a lot of their own philosophies, a lot of their own interests. I'm sure they're interested in figuring out how to customize what you offer with what they're offering. I'm just curious about how that's unfolding, what kind of dialogue you're having. I mean, we're having a blast here. I'm doing some fascinating interviews with people who are really pushing the edge of the envelope, you know, using sort of John Holt, you know, kind of unschooling ideas. You and I have talked about this in the past, internal motivation, going away from coercion, much more organic. I'm starting to think it's almost like the Whole Foods movement has moved over to education. It's sort of like organic education is becoming more and more, you know, a thing. So I'm curious about how that dialogue is going on with you and your team at Prenda.
Yeah, it's a good way to put it, is this kind of move towards organic, move towards hyperlocal, and seeing the humanity in the children, right? If you can look at a child as a human being and really design around that, it's very different than, you know, you'd get to different outcomes in a lot of ways. So that philosophy is definitely connected. We have people on my staff that have very strong backgrounds in that. You could definitely say, though, that we have taken a kind of a compromise position, right? And part of that is because that's how society works, and that's what needs to be true, the accountability, and we happen to support this. There's places where, you know, we are not as far as maybe somebody that's very actively promoting unschooling. I've been, you know, taken to task by some of those folks and their friends of mine, and I welcome that criticism. I would say that 10 to 1, the feedback that we get from parents is the other direction. So you have a lot more people that are conditioned, you know, to kind of believe in an escalator model where you put your kid in when they're 5 and they come out the other end with a job. We've had to kind of, I guess, encourage discussion and thinking around that and ask, is that really kind of the model that's going to work for your child? And when you watch, you know, how they're engaging and how they're showing up inside of that escalator journey, is that working for them? And oftentimes parents will, you know, they'll nod and they'll say, yes, but I'm, you know, I'm scared. I want assurances. I want this. And so I go back to the old Plutarch quote that I talk about all the time, you know, that the mind is not a vessel to be filled. It's a fire to be kindled. And is there fire in the mind of your child? You know, do you see them light up about things? And they'll always have a story. You know, when they were 5, they found out about this thing and I couldn't get them to stop. We had to check out every book from the library.
Yeah.
And that's not, you know, specific to one type of kid. You know, humans are born this way.
Yeah.
The question is now 5 years later, they're in 5th grade and that's gone. Right. And so you're asking that question of how to get that back and what does that look like?
You mentioned this earlier, but I just wanted to end with sort of your vision of where this is all going. You said you didn't think this was a short-term thing, that even after the pandemic, you know, hopefully is gone, that that there's been a culture shift. Talk a little bit more about that. I mean, where do you see things in 2-3 years down the road?
Yeah, it's a great question. And you know, like all of us, I'm just guessing. But from our point of view, we definitely see things that sort of transcend the kind of immediate expediency of what's going on. And the place that I would point to is the question of, you know, what am I looking for in my child's education? It's become, for a lot of people through the pandemic, it's become very visible, very up close. And whether you wanted to or not, you are witnessing this. You're engaged in battles over worksheets at the kitchen table, and you're watching your child on a Zoom call, you know, with 30 other kids. And so as these things happen, and I think there's lots of learning to be had, and parents are watching it, starting to ask those questions. Well, what is this? And they can go back to their own life and say, you know, what was it from my upbringing and my youth that prepared me for things? And sometimes it's going to be specific content that they remembered in a class as part of a syllabus. But I think more often than that, it's going to be, you know, the equivalent of the 2-year-old, you know, stumbling through, and you make some mistakes, and you have this social experiments, and you tackle a challenge and it's difficult, and you work hard to, you know, do work you're proud of. And there's lots of things that go far beyond some of the kind of blocking and tackling aspects of education. I just hope people, I think I feel confident that they will, that parents generally are seeing that and starting to ask those questions. And when the conversations happen now, you know, at the park, and the parents are talking, I hope they'll say things like, you know, my child loves learning. It's not so much my child's going to get into Harvard or whatever the old way was, but it's I can see that fire kindled in my kid.